The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight on Unsigned, I'm talking Major League Baseball, the NBA lockout, Vladimir Klitschko versus David Haye, heavyweight title fight, this weekend at the movies, and the hot dog eating championship. All this and much, much more happening now only on Unsigned. Hey everybody, how you doing out there? Welcome to another edition of Unsigned. I'm your host, Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me on another Tuesday evening. Coming off a big 4th of July weekend. Hope everybody had a great time. 4th of July, fireworks, cookouts, and all the great things that come with it. God bless the USA and America, one of the best countries in the world. And we are very fortunate to live in a country where, you know, we get to do those things pretty much anytime we want. If you want to cook out every weekend, go right ahead. It is America that you have that right to do so. But don't forget about the servicemen and women who, you know, paved the way for us to have that independence. 4th of July. Did you go see fireworks, Mike?
I got to watch it from my front yard, actually.
Ah, very nice. Yeah, some fireworks here in Tennessee as well. I lit a few fireworks off myself. That's one thing about living in the South, Mike, is that firework tents are on every corner. And when you buy in the weekend of 4th of July, they're like, here, buy one and take one. 70% off. Get these things out of here. Go blow stuff up. It sounded like a Civil War reenactment in my neighborhood last night until about 1 in the morning. It was quite a sight to behold. But a lot of stuff we got to cover tonight here on Unsigned. We don't have any guests, unfortunately, but I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. If you're out there, give us a call, 724-444-7444. Caller ID is 93964-POUND. The PIN number is 1 and pound. Now I want to get right into it, and we're not going to start off with basketball for the first time in a long time. We're going to jump right into the Boys of Summer, the All-American pastime, coming off a big 4th of July weekend. The American League and National League All-Star starting lineups were announced, and I'm going to go ahead and cover the American League first. At the catcher position is going to be Alex Avila from the Detroit Tigers. First base is Adrian Gonzalez from the Boston Red Sox. Second base is Robinson Cano, the Yankees. Third base, Alex Rodriguez, also from the Yankees. Shortstop, and this is a big question mark for me, not that he made the All-Star, but that he's a starter, and that is Derek Jeter. Now, he is chasing 3,000 hits right now. He just had a hit this evening off Cleveland Indians. He was held hitless yesterday. He is 4 hits away from 3,000. Other members of the 3,000-hit club include, but not limited to, some notables I thought worth mentioning. Rob Carew, Ricky Henderson, Dave Winfield, Tony Gwynn, Cal Ripken Jr., and one of my favorites from the Boston Brewers, Robin Yount, who hit 3,142 hits. He got his 3,000 hits. This is a trivia question I put on Twitter earlier today, off the Cleveland Indians former pitcher Jose Mesa in 1992. Now, Robin Yount was also one of the youngest players to ever reach 3,000. The only younger ones to do that were Ty Cobb and Hank Aaron, who reached 3,000 hits faster than Robin Yount at that age in 1992. So Derek Jeter closing in on 3,000 hits. As an Indians fan, I hope he doesn't get any more hits for the rest of the series, and he can get his 3,000 hits at Yankee Stadium against somebody else other than the Cleveland Indians. Moving on with that starting lineup, we have outfielder Jose Bautista for the Toronto Blue Jays, well-deserving, possibly in the MVP race, I would think. Outfielder Josh Hamilton, again, a question mark considering he was injured for several weeks of the season from the Rangers. Also, outfielder from the Yankees, Curtis Granderson, who's had a very nice season. And the designated hitter is David Ortiz from the Boston Red Sox. So lots of Red Sox, lots of Yankees in the starting lineup. Here are some of the pitchers that are worth noting. Felix Hernandez from the Mariners, Josh Beckett from the Red Sox, Aaron Crow from the Kansas City Royals. And Indians pitcher Chris Perez gets the nod as one of the pitchers as well. Mariano Rivera from the Yankees, no surprise there, one of the greatest closers of all time. Justin Verlander from the Detroit Tigers, again, amazing pitcher. Now, here's some reserve notables. Miguel Cabrera from the Detroit Tigers. Astrubia Cabrera, who I thought, who plays shortstop for the Indians, who, if you follow baseball at all, this guy's on a web gem about every week, making some kind of fantastic play at the shortstop position, a la Omar Vizquel. Maybe swings the bat a little better. Not quite at the Omar Vizquel level, but this guy does barehanders behind the backs. Great shortstop for the Cleveland Indians. I thought he deserved, with his play in the field alone and on top of his hitting this season, should have been the starting position. That's just my opinion. Now we move on to the National League and that starting lineup. We'll start with the catcher. That's Brian McCann of the Braves. First base goes to Prince Fielder of the Milwaukee Brewers. No surprise there. Second base goes to Ricky Weeks from the Brewers. Third base goes to Placido Plekanco. I'm probably butchering that name. That's the Philadelphia Phillies. Shortstop goes to Jose Reyes from the New York Mets. Outfielder, Ron Braun from the Brewers again. And outfielder Lance Berkman from the Cardinals. And also outfielder Matt Kemp from the Los Angeles Dodgers, who I anticipate to be on the market for purchase very shortly. Mark Cuban has expressed interest. He's expressed this before of owning a baseball team, whether it be the Rangers or the Cubs. I think this fits a lot better. I think Major League, I don't know if Major League Baseball is ready for an owner such as Mark Cuban, but it makes sense. You know, the guy has a proven track record. Look what he's done with the Dallas Mavericks, world champion Dallas Mavericks. 11 years, 11 times in the playoffs. Seems to know how to balance the team pretty well. That's just what the Dodgers need at this point. After the mismanagement that they have been dealing with in the last past several years. Some notable pitchers for the National League. We have Cole Hamill, Joel Hanstrom from the Pirates. Cliff Lee, no surprise there. The guy had three shutouts in the month of June. I don't think anybody has done that since the 1920s or something. Tim Lincecum from the Giants, and also Brian Wilson, also making the All-Star team from the Giants as well. I don't know if anybody caught his temper tantrum in the dugout as he's kicking and throwing Gatorade coolers all over the place and then taking a bat and going Barry Bonds on one. No beard was harmed in the swinging of that bat, I've been informed. Brian Wilson, no relation to the Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys. Let's get that out of the way right now, okay? So there are some of your starters for the Major League Baseball All-Stars. Now, we had Darryl Ryder on a couple weeks ago talking about this. Now, the fans vote. You have a limit of 25 votes per person, which I think is a little much. There's a couple guys that got snubbed. But with that being said, you're going to have that every year, regardless of what sport it is. I really think, and basketball has the same problem with this as well, where, you know, the fans vote in the All-Stars. And, you know, every year Yao Ming gets, you know, millions and millions of votes, even though he didn't even play a single minute last season in the NBA. Was voted the All-Star team. Unfair. So I think you have to have a balance where, you know, whether it's 25 or 50% goes to the fans, and the other part should be, you know, GMs, coaches, owners, other players, I think should have a say on who is elected to these All-Star games. Will baseball ever adopt that change? I doubt it. I highly doubt it. And to have interleague play during 4th of July weekend, I thought was kind of ridiculous as well, but that's just baseball, and that's how baseball does it. But at this point, what's their competition? The NFL, lockout. NBA, lockout. The boys of summer are back, and baseball is going to have it the way they want to have it, just like Burger King. So we move into the Major League Baseball recap. We break down every division, team by team, as far as the standings go. And here we go. Again, we'll start with the AL. We have the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Yankees, it's been a battle all year between these two teams. No surprise, really. The Yankees have a game and a half lead over the Red Sox right now. Red Sox got roughed up by the Phillies last week. I mean, Cliff Lee and company lights out pitching. Unbelievable. Phillies, again, look to be the part in the National League. But the Yankees have that game and a half lead and have won 7 out of their last 10. Moving to the AL Central, the Cleveland Indians, who that ship seemed to be sinking have kind of plugged some holes and found themselves back in first place with a game and a half lead. They're playing 500 baseball. Playing great at home, 25-14 at home, 20-24 on the road. You'd like to see that reverse. But again, the Tribe beat the Yankees last night. They're in a battle night now against the Yankees. And the Tigers have really not played good baseball. The White Sox are only 3.5 games out. They have slowly creeping up into that division. Again, a lot of baseball to go. We're only about at the halfway mark. So it'll be interesting to see if the White Sox can put something together and put a run together and challenge the Indians and Tigers, who have been playing really subpar baseball. Moving to the AL West, the Rangers, a team that's, again, really been subpar here in the last 10-15 games, playing about 500 baseball. And the Los Angeles Angels find themselves in a deadlock tie with the Rangers. They have won 8 of their last 10 baseball games. The Angels making a run at it. And the Mariners, again, right there. You know, nobody thought the Mariners would really be in a race at all in this division here. They only find themselves 2.5 games back, playing 500 baseball out of their last 10 baseball games. Moving on to the National League, we have the Philadelphia Phillies. No surprise, they still hold a 4-game lead over the Atlanta Braves. The next closest team in that division is the New York Mets, and they're 10.5 games out. Phillies look to be the elite team in Major League Baseball. Heading to the Central Division in the AL, in the National League, you have the St. Louis Cardinals, Milwaukee Brewers, Pittsburgh Pirates, and the slumping Cincinnati Reds, who are now below 500. They've lost 6 out of their last 10. Now, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the unsigned clap goes to them. They're over 500 for the first time since 1992. Now, take a moment and think about that. If you're a fan of baseball, let's say you're a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, you haven't been over 500 at this point in the season. It's July. It's early July. You haven't been over 500 since 1992. And they're only a game and a half out of first place, St. Louis. St. Louis and the Reds are playing tonight. We'll try to get an update on that score if possible. Again, the Milwaukee Brewers are right there as well, only a game back. This division, as I said, you know, when we originally started our Major League Baseball recap when the season kicked off, I said this division is going to, you know, it's going to be a dogfight. I expected the Reds to pull it out, but at this point, they're only 3 games out. At this point, they don't look like they're going to be able to win this division because the Pirates, Brewers, and Cardinals all seem to be pretty solid teams and have kind of beat one another up a little bit. And Albert Pujols has been cleared to come back and play a little earlier than anticipated. So they get Albert Pujols back. He took batting practice today and hit every single ball. He said he was worried about how his wrist was going to feel if he missed a pitch. For a guy who doesn't miss a whole lot of pitches, I think Albert Pujols is going to be okay and come back and play some very solid baseball, swinging the bat for the St. Louis Cardinals. I look for them at this point and to come out of this division in the NL Central. Now, you look at the NL West, this has been interesting. The Rockies started off really hot. They, again, are slumping due to a lot of injuries on this team right now. They have lost 7 out of their last 10. The Arizona Diamondbacks have cooled off a little bit, but still only 2 games out. And the San Francisco Giants, despite the injury to their catcher, despite the injury to their second baseman, solid pitching and consistent hitting from other positions and good defense has kept them in first place in the NL West. And the Dodgers, what can you say about the Dodgers? They're in trouble in a whole lot of different ways. They've lost 7 out of their last 10. They are 27-49. 11 games out of first place. A lot going on with that team other than just bad baseball on the field. Bad management. They're being run by Major League Baseball at this point because their owner proved to be incompetent and cannot run the team. So a lot of questions for Los Angeles Dodgers, more questions than answers at this point. It'd be interesting to see what happens in the offseason when the smoke settles. This has been your Major League Baseball recap. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. How's it going, everybody? Hopefully you're doing all right out there. Again, phone lines are open tonight. I'll go ahead and throw the number out to you now. It is 724-444-7444, caller ID 939-64#. The PIN number is 1#. Moving on tonight, we're going to take a step back. You know, covered a lot of baseball here. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a step back and we're going to go to a section of the show we call Off the Path. This is where we talk about non-sports related topics. And I want to start off tonight by talking about Madonna. No, this is not a joke. I'm not going to talk about Lady Gaga. I'm actually going to talk about Madonna tonight. Madonna has begun work on her 12th studio album. It's official. Madonna's first day in the recording studio for the new album has begun. Her manager, Gary Osiri, tweeted yesterday, there's no official word on who the pop icon will be working with on the new record, but it's been rumored she's going to be working with some superstar DJs. DJ A-Trax will be involved in other DJs as well. This new record will come out at the end of the year, will be the singer's first collection of new material since Hard Candy came out in 2008. That album, which featured collaborations from Timberland, Justin Timberlake, Pharrell Williams, and really went to like an urban pop sensibility on that album, it would suggest in this collaboration with all the DJs, the club DJs she's bringing in, she's gearing towards more of a hard electro house music type direction. Again, Madonna always changing, always evolving. She is a pop icon. She's the female pop icon. She's also be interesting to see what Madonna comes up, what she comes up with for her 12th album. It'd be interesting to see. Again, no release date has been set. They expect it to be out at the end of the year. Now here, it is summertime. We're really in the middle of the summer. 4th of July just ended, halfway through the summer, really, at this point. The summer concert series is on its way, and here's a couple concert series you may want to take a look at. July 6th, tomorrow, Soundgarden. The original Soundgarden begins their tour. Singer Chris Cornell says, we are reuniting and completely immersed in cutting their first studio LP since 1996, but the U.S. tour will be devoted to old school jams and all their fans. We will go way back to the very first release of 1987, Screaming Life Fop, Chris Cornell says, who promises to bring back fans from Slaves and Bulldozers as well. The band doesn't feel like something that this is something that has to be done or that it's nostalgic. It just feels that 20 years later, these guys are just now starting to feel fresh and vital again. Very interesting stuff. This makes me very happy. I don't have tour dates, unfortunately, for you. Once we have that information, we'll definitely get that onto you. The tour begins tomorrow, so I'm sure you can go to Ticketmaster, go to Soundgarden.com or whatever their website is and get that information if you want to go see Soundgarden live. I've seen Chris Cornell solo, which is amazing. He does a lot of Soundgarden stuff, but I would love to see the original Soundgarden basically come out and say, you know what, let's just play all our old stuff and let's really cut our teeth here and get back at it and see how we feel and then go do an album. This is a good sign for music as far as rock and roll is concerned. Forget grunge and all the other labels that you can put with it. Soundgarden has been around a long time, since 1997. A very solid group, a very solid band, very good for music that these guys are getting back together. Going to do an album, going to do a full tour. Very good stuff. Also, Judas Priest has a tour coming up. For nearly 40 years, this band, Judas Priest, has been basically bringing heavy metal to the masses in all corners of the planet. Now, Judas Priest, one of the most influential metal bands of our era and time, has announced that this will be their final tour. The European tour started early June that will span the globe, including South Africa, obviously a European tour, South America, Mexico. U.S. tour starts October 12th in San Antonio, Texas. Circle that day on your calendar. You can go to Judas Priest's website and find out what city they're coming to. So if they're coming to your city, you better get there. Now, unfortunately, I'm in Tennessee in the Bible Belt. No shocker that Judas Priest is not coming to Nashville, Tennessee. But they are going to be in some other cities in vicinity of me. I will do my best to make sure I go see that. So if you're a Judas Priest fan, you haven't had a chance to see Rob Halford and the boys, this is your last chance to do it. Of course, all bands say that, oh, this is our final tour. This is our final tour. I believe this time Rob Halford, with his other projects that he has going on, his solo album and so forth, I believe this probably will be the last hurrah for the heavy metal legends Judas Priest. Moving on here tonight on Off the Path, Shia LaBeouf, who is the action film star of the Transformer trilogy, made a very interesting appearance on Live with Regis and Kelly Lee. The superstar is best known again for his Transformer roles. He admitted that he is directing a documentary about shock rocker Marilyn Manson. LeBeau told Kelly Rhea, apparently, who was a Manson fan herself, that some that you know he's been interested in doing this, and Manson came to him and basically gave him permission to do a documentary film, you know, basically filming Marilyn Manson's upcoming album, which no release date has been set. Now, LeBeau joked about the Manson thing, saying, you know, this is Manson's eighth album. He said when he went in the morning, you know, he didn't realize how, you know, I guess how Manson really was. He said he came into Manson's lair. He said there were no lights. There were big metal doors, and Marilyn Manson came out in a kimono, a big pink kimono. He said the lair of sorts has no lights. He said he had to use his cell phone to guide himself around. Very interesting to see what this documentary is going to look like. Again, no release date has been set, but it also is a documentary of Manson making his eighth album as well, again, which no due date has been set. They say later this year. So you have Madonna coming out with an album. You have Marilyn Manson coming out with an album. You have Soundgarden coming out with a new album within the next probably calendar year. So, again, very good times for music. You know, you have some of these artists who have been around for some time still making legitimate, relevant music. Always good to see. Now, speaking of the movies and Shia LaBeouf, we're going to do our top movies over the 4th of July weekend. We do this every week here on Sign. We'll start with number 10. We will work our way up to number 1. Midnight in Paris, 3.4 million. Number 9, Bridesmaid, still on the top 10, 3.5 million. Mr. Popper's Penguins, Jim Carrey film at 5.1 million. The Green Lantern at 6.2 million. Number 6, Super 8. 7.8 million. That is the unsigned seal of approval movie. If you're looking for a good old fashioned solid movie, that's the one right there. Monte Carlo, kind of a flop, 7.6 million. Larry Crown, which is a Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts film, 13 million. The film Bad Teacher, comedy, 14.1 million. The movie Cars 2, animated film, kids film, 25.1 million. Now get this. The number one movie this weekend, should come to no shock, is Transformers Dark of the Moon, $97.4 million. That is what you call bringing home the bacon. Now, I had some information on the Transformers film. Now, I went and saw the Transformers film Sunday. Now, of the trilogy, I will say that this is probably one of the better ones, although the critics have been very critical of this particular film. I think it was very good. It really does bring closure to the trilogy. And for everyone who thought, there's no Megan Fox in it, I don't know if I want to see it. Those of you who are worried about Megan Fox not being in the film and wonder who's gonna take place of the eye candy on this film, have no fear. Go see the film, and when you see the opening of the film, you will see the stunning Rosie Huntington Whiteley filling the void very nicely for Megan Fox. Now, Miss Huntington Whiteley is a former Victoria's Secret model. So, you know, she's a very attractive woman. She actually does a very good job acting. And as far as I know, her very first feature film that brought in over $90 million on its very first week. Now, the film itself, a lot of good action that you would expect from this type of film, Transformers 3, Dark of the Moon. You have Leonard Nimoy, which we talked about, is the voice of Sentinel Prime. A lot of action scenes. There are casualties on both sides as far as Transformers are concerned. Decepticons and Autobots. I will not tell you, obviously, who those casualties are. You're just going to have to go see the movie and find out for yourself. If you're a fan of the movies, if you like the first one, you were, I don't know about Revenge of the Fallen. I don't know if I liked that movie that much. I liked it because it was Transformers. It wasn't as good as I thought it would be. The third one will bring you back, and it does bring closure. The story is very good. It's fresh. Worth a look. Now, speaking of this movie, after 6 days, this movie's been out for 6 days, mind you, grossing, now for the 3-day weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they had the $96 million. Now, domestically, when you add the first couple days in the you had, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and you had Monday, 4th of July. You have $181 million. Worldwide, this film made $379 million. I'd say Dark of the Moon is looking pretty bright. They did about 60% of the domestic business, 70% of the international box office in 3D theaters. And it's first week. Wow. It'd be amazing to see what they do in the second week as the summer moves right along. Unbelievable. $379 million worldwide. Michael Bay is one rich dude. Wow. That concludes this section of Off the Path here tonight on Sign. My name is Ryan. Again, thanks for hanging out with me on a wonderful Tuesday night, post 4th of July weekend. Hope you had a wonderful 4th of July. Now I want to move in, and everyone knows that I'm a boxing fan, and I've been, I've talked about boxing on the show quite a bit, whether it's heavyweight division, featherweights, welterweights, so on and so forth. Now, a couple weeks ago, even last week, I said the Vladimir Klitschko-David Haye fight is going to be great. It's going to be the heavyweight fight that boxing needs. It was 3 years in the making. 3 years in the making, this heavyweight title. You had legends in Germany, like fellow Englishman Lennox Lewis, who opened the gate for David Haymaker Haye at the entrance, and then he fought his way, led by security, to the ring. Now, before he came to the ring, Michael Buffer had to make an announcement that David Haye was not quite ready yet. Now, this is the same guy who talked all this trash over Vladimir Klitschko for years and years and years. The t-shirt with Vladimir Klitschko's head severed. This guy was a lot of sound. And then all of a sudden, he needed a little bit more time. This is the same David Haye who dodged Klitschko two other times. Now, he finally talked himself into this. He finally got himself to the ring. And American promoters take notice. The scene in Germany, although it was an outdoor arena, an outdoor soccer stadium in Munich, Germany, 45,000 people. It was a raucous crowd, a rowdy crowd. Packed people were chanting, cheering. That was the scene. Was the electricity was there. The loudmouth, brash Englishman, you know, again, been talking trash over Klitschko for years. The scene was set for this big fight. And then it was time for Vladimir Klitschko to come to the ring. George Foreman is the one who opened the gate for him. The Red Hot Chili Peppers came on. George Foreman opens the door, and there stood 6'6", 242-pound Russian Vladimir Klitschko, looking like a real-life Ivan Drago. I'll break you. Klitschko, also known as the Dr. Steel Hammer, for his heavy right hand and his steady left jab. The stage, again, was set. Michael Buffer did his... Ladies and gentlemen, for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world. Ding, ding, ding. The bell rang. Here we go. The electricity, the crowd was in it. And then it just slowly fizzled out. Klitschko, for all the, you know, all his skill, and David Haye, for all his trash talking, proved to really be all sound. Klitschko dominated. Now, when I say dominated the fight, I mean he dominated the fight as much as he could because David Haye basically ran away from him for 11 rounds. David Haye's whole tactic, as far as I'm concerned, was to land one big shot and knock Klitschko out. Not a good way to go about trying to beat Vladimir Klitschko. Dominated the fight. It was jab, 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 right hook to the face. David Haye only won two rounds, one round that he probably shouldn't have won that ended up being a tie because he kept falling and flopping onto the canvas every time they got tied up, and the ref, before the ref could break him up, David Haye would fall to the mat. Eventually, he ended up getting Klitschko deducted a point, which was poor refereeing in my eyes and a lot of the other people's eyes as well looking at the fight. Klitschko punished him and punished him often. The flops, eventually, by the time the 7th, 8th round rolled around, at this point, the flops became pretty much ridiculous in the fact that David Haye wanted no part of Vladimir Klitschko at all, that he really was just all sound, he really was just all trash talk, and he got outclassed and outboxed by a world-class fighter, Vladimir Klitschko. Now, in the 12th round, David Haye, out of desperation, landed his best punch of the fight that rocked Klitschko. But Klitschko came right back like the world-class prize fighter he was and drilled David Haye with an overhand right, proving that he, again, like there was any doubt at that point in the 12th round, that he is a better fighter and an outright heavyweight champion. Vladimir Vitaly Klitschko, his brother, now hold all of boxing's major titles in the heavyweight division. Klitschko won his 13th fight, his 10th straight title defense, and he holds the WBA strap. He also holds the IBO, the IBF, and the WBO heavyweight title. The ring judges scored the fight 117-109, 118-108, 116-110 for unanimous Dr. Steelhammer Vladimir Klitschko. By the end of the fight, Vladimir Klitschko, and this is the staggering numbers here, folks, 105 of his 134 jabs were landed on David Haye. Now you think about that. 105 of his 134 jabs were landed on David Haye. Dr. Steelhammer Vladimir Klitschko proved that David Haye was all talk. This is Vladimir Klitschko's post-fight comments. And he expressed disappointment at failing to land his 50th knockout at the age of 35. "I wish I could have knocked him out impressively," Klitschko said. "I was expecting more of a challenge in the ring and more aggression." Now, David Haye, who pretty much had been embarrassed at this point after 12 rounds of boxing and probably set back the heavyweight division another 3 years, even though this fight has been 3 years in the making, he just set it back another 3 years, if not more, with an embarrassing showcase. Hey, as long as the check clears, isn't that right, David Haymaker Hayes? One punch wonder? I think that's basically what it came down to. He talked himself into a fight. I'm getting a payday. It's in Germany. What the heck? I don't care. I'm getting paid. And probably paid very well, I'm sure. Now, here's the thing that really irks me. David Haye, in his post-fight interview, blames his poor performance. Now, it wasn't just a poor performance. It's not like he just lost a decision card. He got dominated for 11 out of 12 rounds. He said that 3 weeks ago he broke his pinky toe, and he had his boot off. And I kid you not, David Haye had his boot off in the ring and is showing Larry Merchant in the ring, "Look, see, look, my toe, it's broken. It's broken. I got my boot off to show everybody." And later Twittered a picture of his broken toe saying, "Well, you know, that's just how it goes." David Haye landed 6 punches in the 5th round. He landed 6 punches in the 6th round. He landed 7 punches in the 7th round, landed 4 punches in the 8th round, landed 5 punches in the 9th round, and 1 punch in the 10th and the 11th round. The guy quit throwing punches. He was trying to dance and basically fall over the ring and flop all over the ring and try to avoid Klitschko at all costs by the time the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th round came along. Probably one of the most negative performances you're ever going to see in a heavyweight fight. Klitschko landed over double the punches than David Haye did. Complete domination of the heavyweight division, 10 straight victories, defending his titles. I don't know what is next for the heavyweight division. I have no idea. I guess it would be Klitschko versus Klitschko. I don't know if they'll necessarily do that. What do they stand to gain? They already own all the titles. They have them all. There's no American heavyweight. David Haye, the Englishman who said he was going to revitalize the heavyweight division. Obviously, that's not happening. So there you have it. There's your heavyweight title fight broke down for you. If you missed it, well, you didn't miss much. I was hoping that I'd be able to come on the show tonight and say, the world heavyweight title in Germany Saturday night was amazing. It was a 12-round knockdown, drag-out war that we thought it would be. Not so much. It was 12 rounds of David Haye trying to get the hell out of and away from Vladimir Dr. Steelhammer Klitschko. Of course, if I were in the ring with Dr. Steelhammer Klitschko, I'd probably want to dance around and get away from him as well. He looked menacing. 6'6", chiseled out of steel, 242 pounds, and just as crafty and as powerful and strong as you could possibly want out of your heavyweight champion. Say what you want. The American promoters and the American fighters can say what they want because, you know, Klitschko didn't grew up in the streets of Philadelphia, or he didn't have to struggle, yada, yada, yada. And you know what? Every fighter that stepped in front of Vladimir Klitschko, he is either knocked out or completely dominated for 12 rounds to a unanimous decision. So say what you will, but the man has dominated the heavyweight division like no other in the last 10 years. All right. Set my piece on boxing. Moving on tonight here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. We have the NBA lockout. As you know, the NBA lockout is in full effect. We had Mr. Jeff Sack on last week to break it down for us. The anticipation of the lockout is finally here. As of 12:01 this past Friday in the AM, no offseason trades, no free agency signings. The rules of the game are strict on the part of the NBA. Significant fines per David Stern in the NBA are as such. Any team employees who dare disobey or contact the player will be punished with a $1 million fine and possible loss of draft picks in the future. Team employees are not permitted to even contact players remotely. I'm a call from Georgia. Caller, how you doing?
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing, man?
What's your name? Ryan.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, it's Al. What's up, dude?
Hey, Al. How you doing, man?
What's up, man? I couldn't help but listen in. I was loving the music section. Sounded great.
Ah, well, hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Al, a musician himself here calling from Georgia. How you been, man? Did you want to weigh in on the any of the new albums coming out with Soundgarden or Madonna or anything like that?
Yeah, it was... Man, the whole Soundgarden thing, I mean, you know, Soundgarden's one of my, they're probably one of my top favorite bands, but, like, I wish I, one of the shows was coming out somewhere sooner, because I want to get to see them so badly. It's, like, one of my lifelong goals is to see those guys live, so hopefully they'll come somewhere sooner with the tour. And then the new album, yeah, I'm totally game for. If any of the bands that are out now that were from the 90s could put out a new album and still sound great, I have no doubt that Soundgarden could.
Yeah, especially with the original lineup, it'd be the first album since 1996, since Down on the Upside
down
was
the
last
upside.
Full album
yeah.
they did, which is a great CD. Be interesting to see. I think it's going to take some time to do the album, but I like the fact that, you know, instead of just going right to the studio, they're going to go hit the road for about a month or so, and they're also going to be playing Lollapalooza in Chicago early August. I do know that. You know, they're going to cut their teeth, get their chops up, and then hit the studio, which I think is a good way to go about it.
Oh, definitely. I expect good things from Soundgarden. And usually bands of that caliber, I have no doubt, can put out, you know, amazing stuff every time they do it. And I didn't know that you're talking about the Marilyn Manson biopic. That should be pretty interesting, too.
He's getting ready to do his eighth album, and Shia LaBeouf, the from the Transformer films, is going to be filming the documentary about him making that album, which should be proved to be very interesting. Hopefully, they get a nice shot of him in that pink kimono. I'd like to see Manson in the big bright pink kimono. I think that will look very nice. Maybe that should be the album cover. That should probably be the album cover.
That really should. That would be. I think it would probably people would be like. A bunch of these young kids who probably don't, they probably only know Marilyn Manson from, like, their parents telling them not to listen to it. That would be nice to let them bring home one of those albums with that on the cover.
I agree. I think music has become very vanilla here in the last several years. And you have acts like Lady Gaga. Although, you know, we've criticized her a bunch on the show, but I also think that she has some musical talent. But when you look at, you know, her just trying to be outlandish, where Marilyn Manson is just, you know, he's kind of an odd character, but a very intelligent, well-spoken gentleman who's made music for a long time. And I anticipate his album to be very good.
Oh, yeah. I heard actually about the new album. I had heard that it's supposed to be very punk-like, more like the Mechanical Animals album was. So that should be pretty interesting. The last album was it was a little different, but it had some really, really good tracks on it. And Eat Me, Drink Me was all right, but Mechanical Animal, you know, that's a classic. So if they're saying it sounds something like Mechanical Animals, it should be pretty good.
Yeah, Mechanical Animals is a great album, and even obviously, you know, Antichrist Superstar, Portrait of American Family, is their other stuff. Again, very solid albums, a little bit more
Yeah.
Different time of music as well. But be interesting to see what Marilyn Manson does here on his eighth studio release. Al, any other anything else you'd like to chime in on tonight?
I want to say that I'm hoping my Braves will close that gap. I know Philly is playing pretty phenomenal right now, but I'm hoping my Braves will close that gap. And I saw, like you said, the Windians are getting back on track, so everything's okay.
There we go. Yep. You heard it here, the Windians, folks, the Windians. But, hey, no, I think your Braves have played pretty well, despite I think the Phillies just have superb pitching. They're just kind of in a division that the Braves have really dominated in the last, 10 to 14 years. The Phillies have kind of counteracted. It'd be interesting. There's a lot of baseball to go, and they're only four games out. It's going to be a two-team race, I think, in that division. Because, I mean, you have the Mets and everybody else who are, almost a dozen games out at this point. So it's a two-team race. If the Braves get hot after the All-Star break, they could be right there.
Yep, hopefully. We can only hope.
No doubt. Hey, Al from calling from Georgia. Again, hey, thanks for calling in, man. Call back again sometime, all right?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ryan.
And no problem, Al. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Al from Georgia bringing some interesting points about the Marilyn Manson topic we covered on Off the Path, and also talking about the new Soundgarden album as well, and obviously a Braves fan hoping that the Braves can seal up a wild card spot and get back in the playoffs this season. So I appreciate him calling in. And if there are other people out there who would like to call, feel free. Again, the phone lines are open. I'll go ahead and throw the number out to you again here. It is 724-444. I think I'd have the number memorized by now, all right? But is that bad? I don't have it memorized? 724-444-7444 is the number. Caller ID is 93964-POUND. The PIN number is 1 and pound. So feel free. If you have anything you want to weigh in, we've talked about or we have talked about, whether it's Major League Baseball, anything in music, movies, sports, whatever the case may be, feel free to give us a call. We'll definitely give you a platform to say your piece here on Unsigned. And that's, one of the things that, we want to address to our listeners, that if you have something to say, something you want to bring to the show, by all means, feel free to call up. We'll let you say your piece, whether we agree with it or not. Doesn't matter. Yeah, I give my opinion all the time here on the show. You may not agree with it. You may agree with it. And that's fine. That's why we have the phone lines here. So if you don't agree with something or you want to chime in, we'll definitely let you say your piece. Now, moving on here on Unsigned tonight, again, the NBA lockout, as I said, is now in full effect. The owners, again, are the NBA are basically laying down the law, saying that if you contact any players at all, there will be a $1 million fine and the possibility of losing draft picks. So any remote contact with players, their agents, even their family members and friends. Now, the funny thing is that Dirk Nowitzki from the Dallas Mavericks, finals MVP of the championship this year, he tweeted, I follow him on Twitter, he said, I wonder if watching NBA TV is allowed. Once the lockout came and this information came out about the fines and contact and these type of things. Heck, the NBA.com took down pictures of the players. The NBA owners are not messing around. They are serious about this lockout, and I think the owners are, although they don't necessarily want to lose a season, if they have to lose a season to get what they want, that's what they consider a reasonable business decision for a future model and the future of the NBA, I think they're willing to do it. And it'll be interesting to see how long the players' union and the players will stand together. Other players have come out and said they're more united now than they were back in 1999 when they locked out and lost over almost 50 games. I'm telling you, if you think the NFL is a mess, wait till the NBA lockout gets full tilt. I mean, it's only been about a week. And many, again, will believe that they will lose all 82 games in the playoffs. If that happens, if the NBA loses all 82 games and the postseason, we talked about it last week here on the show with Mr. Jeff Sack. Do you think the NBA can recover from that, from the casual fan, the fan base, the momentum they have gained in the last 3-4 months with the huge TV ratings? They're having 10, 12, 15 million listener or viewers every night for a playoff game. The NBA recover from that? I'm a fan of the NBA. I love basketball. I will come back and watch the game. But I'm in the minority when it comes to that. I'm probably in the 20 percentile when it comes to that. You have other fans who are just fans just because maybe they don't like LeBron James. You know, whatever the case may be, can the NBA recover, and how do they recover? Because you look back at 1999, you know, the Spurs won that title in 99, but then you have Shaquille O'Neal in the prime of his career and wins, boom, 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 three titles back-to-back-to-back with the Los Angeles Lakers, and all his charisma and all his wonder on the basketball floor, larger-than-life icon. You had guys like that that really resurrected the NBA. I don't know if you look at the way the league is set up right now, if you have players of that caliber. If Kobe Bryant was in his prime, I would say, yeah, they'd be all right. Kobe could carry the banner. Can Dwayne Wade and LeBron James bring back the popularity of the NBA? They're already not popular guys to begin with. Heck, Dwayne Wade said, well, he's got, now the lockout's on, I'm available for weddings and birthday parties. Really, you make $15 million a year and you're going to make a comment like that? I guess $15 million doesn't go as far as we thought it did. It's going to be interesting to see. Both sides are very far apart on salary cap, contract length. I mean, the list goes on and on of things they are just nowhere in the same room and vicinity of agreeing upon. But interesting to see what's going to happen. And the NFL is in the same boat, and they're about to lose more time. They still haven't hammered out a deal yet, and they're over 100 days in. Another question I bring up here about the NBA lockout, and this just happened. This brings up more questions than answers again with this lockout. We're only about a week into it. Now, our GMs are going to worry about their players staying in shape, being in good health, not doing anything that's going to get them injured, such as motorcycle accidents and these type of things that have happened. But also, are you going to see more NBA players entertaining the idea of going to play overseas? Newly acquired, this is already starting to happen. I think you may see more of this. It wouldn't surprise me. You have a lot of European players in the NBA. Newly acquired small forward of the champion Dallas Mavericks, Rudy Fernandez, who was acquired on draft night via trade from Portland, said he's going to go play for Real Madrid and do a six-year deal. What's to keep other guys from doing the same? Yeah, I mean, technically they're under contract with the NBA, but they're locked out. A lot of guys are opting out of their contract. Shannon Brown from the Los Angeles Lakers, Nene from the Denver Nuggets. Other guys have opted out of their contracts. I think it's because they're going to go play overseas. Maybe these are guys who just, you know what, we've made plenty of money in the NBA. We have millions. League average is $5.5 million. If you really like basketball and you have millions in the bank already and you live a modest life and you've been smart with your money, why not go overseas and make a couple hundred thousand dollars, see the world, travel Europe, and play the game that you love to play? It'd be interesting to see if you see more players doing that as time moves on. Now, on before the 12th hour came and went, the Cleveland Cavaliers make another splash right before the lockout. They make a big-time trade right lockout is in force, sending four-year veteran power forward J.J. Hickson to the Sacramento Kings for small forward Omar Caspi, the very first Israel-born player in the NBA who was drafted in 2009. The Cavs made the move to fill the void at the small forward position and also got a first-round protected pick. They're sending J.J. Hickson. Many in the area in Cleveland thought that J.J. Hickson was a part of rebuilding the Cavs, but again, with the fourth pick of the draft this coming year with drafting forward Tristan Thompson, it made it very clear that somebody had to move, and with J.J. Hickson being a free agent at the end of next season, he's going to want a large payday, probably around $8 to $10 million. The Cavs saw the writing on the wall. J.J. Hickson saw the writing on the wall. Some people, unfortunately, did not, that he was not a part of the rebuilding process in Cleveland. He was arguably their most talented player. He showed signs of being a possible all-star, but they got rid of him while they still could get value for him, a first-round pick, and they fill a void. Omar Caspi at the age of 23, J.J. Hickson at the age of 23, so very even swap there. Now, the major difference, I think, is this. J.J. Hickson was in Byron Scott's doghouse much of the season for the fact that his basketball IQ and not learning the plays, not learning the offense, taking plays off, not playing good defense. Really an overall lack of effort at times. The only reason he got as much playing time as he did is because of injury, really, and necessity. You had to play him because you didn't have anybody else to play. You had Anderson Varejao out for the season. Antoine Jameson out for the season. Both guys that play power forward. He had to play. You know, I mean, he didn't rebound like you would like to see your power forward rebound. He didn't hustle like you would like to see. Again, he had unsure hands. He didn't run the floor at all times. He did not play good defense. And you draft this kid, Tristan Thompson, who's going to replace J.J. Hickson. And people were critical of the pick. I liked the pick. I called the pick that it would happen. Tristan Thompson is going to do the little things that J.J. Hickson is not willing to do. He's willing to play defense and play it consistently. He's going to block shots. He's going to rebound. He is going to hustle and run the floor. The guy has good footwork and good hands. All the things J.J. Hickson is not. The kid has a nice high basketball IQ and is willing to put the effort in 100% of the time. He's not going to take plays off. He's going to play defense, block shots. He's going to do the little things you can't teach. You could teach offense to a kid. You could teach him. If the kid has all those intangibles and is willing to put that much effort at the age of 19 to play effort and block shots and play defense, that's about effort. If you can do that at the age of 19, you can sure as heck play offense in the NBA. You can be taught that. You can't teach effort. Now, J.J. Hickson, again, at the age of 23, does have a very bright future. He's not going to be a part of the Cavs' future. Now, Caspi, again, as I said, also 23, gives the Cavs a guy who has one. He's got good size at the small forward position. The kid can shoot the ball. He can stretch the floor. He can shoot the three from the corner. Kid shot 47% from three. For those of you who do not know, 43% from three-point range in the NBA, that's at the elite level. That's probably top 15, 20 in the league. The kid is nasty. He's aggressive. He wants to play. He's got a nastiness to him. He's aggressive. He has a high basketball IQ. Likes to attack the rim, willing to work off screens, willing to work on his defensive game. He has a nasty streak. It's known around the league. He's a scrapper. He's going to body up. He's aggressive. He's going to fit well with what the Cavs are trying to do. You draft a young point guard at number one in the draft, Kyrie Irving. Point guard's best friend is a small forward who can stretch the floor and knock down shots. And you got a guy like Tristan Thompson on the inside who's going to aggressively attack the rim and attack the glass and get rebounds. The Cavs, a lot of people are speculating, wondering, what in the world are they doing? They're building it the right way. They're building it the old-fashioned way. And, again, that number one pick is a protected pick. Now, what that means, the Cavaliers' first-round protected pick they obtained from the Sacramento Kings is protected for 2012 picks 1 through 14. So if the Kings end up basically not making the playoffs, the Cavs will not get that pick in 2012. I anticipate if it's a loss of a season, I'm not sure how that works. We'll have Jeff Sack on. We'll probably have him break that down for us. This is where it gets interesting, though. In 2013, 2014, it starts, that protection goes down. Now, their best chance is 2013, 2014. They get, as long as this pick is not a top 10 pick, they're going to get that pick. Sacramento Kings are not that far off from making the playoffs. So hopefully we have a season and they make the playoffs and we get a top 20 pick. We end up picking 15, 16, 17, 18 in a draft that anticipates to be a very deep and a very rich draft coming up next season and a season after that. Having a top 15 pick is like having the pick number 4 this year. Very interesting to see. Now, if the Sacramento Kings completely fall on their face from now until the year 2017, let's hope that doesn't happen, Sacramento will only have to give up a second-round pick. That's the only thing that worries me. But I anticipate the Sacramento Kings, with all the youth and infusion, they just drafted Jermer Fredette, they got J.J. Hickson, they got Tyreek Evans. So they have some guys on that team that are going to, I think, propel them into a 7th, 8th spot in the NBA playoffs. Hopefully the Cavs will get that 15, 16, 17 pick next season, if there is a season. Of course, we know that the lockout is going on. NBA lockout. Gotta love it. Moving on here tonight, Unsigned. Just, nothing says 4th of July like aggressive competition and eating, right? Joey Chestnut won his 5th consecutive Yellow Belt of the Year. Nathan's 4th of July International Hot Dog Eating Contest at Coney Island. Now, check this out. Mr. Joey Chestnut ate 62 hot dogs in 10 minutes, 6 shy of his world record of 68. Adding intrigue to this year's competition, the one-time reigning champion, Kobayashi, who was effectively locked out of the competition due to a contract dispute with Major League Eating, whooped down 69 Frankfurts at an off-site event in New York. Now, how is it? I mean, are there that many people in the major league eating competition that this Kobayashi cannot get a contract? Is it a coup that Joey Chestnut is keeping Kobayashi away? Now, last year Kobayashi was at the event and was obtained by authorities and security and ushered away. Now, check this out. Now, there's also a female version in a female major league eating competition. Sonia Thomas, known for competitive eating worldwide as the Black Widow. This woman ate 40 hot dogs to win the women's event. She hoisted the pink belt, the female version of the converted men's mustard belt, held overhead as she became the first woman to separately win the event. Congratulations, Sonia Thompson, a.k.a. the Black Widow, hammered 40 dogs. Wow. I don't even think 40 hot dogs were eaten in my entire block of this where I live. Get this. Chestnut said he would spend the next few days helping his body recover from the effects of polishing off over 20,000 calories in 10 minutes by eating some yogurt. That's what I do after eating 62 hot dogs. Not that I could ever even attempt doing that. Is, you know, polish it off with a cup of yogurt. Just to, you know, I think if there are sponsors for the Major League Eating, I think the sponsor should be Sherman. I think they should have the cuddly little bears out there saying, "Hey, look, there's no Diggleberries." How would you like to follow the bathroom of Joey Chestnut after that? Whew. Man, it smells like Oscar Mayer hot dogs in here. That's not an air freshener. Oh, it smells like that for like a week. Wow. There you have it. Doesn't it say 4th of July, like the five-time champion, Joey Chestnut. 62 dogs in 10 minutes. Couldn't beat his world record, though. Six shy, 68 dogs. Whew. My stomach hurts thinking about that, man. Hmm. Huh. What do you think? You watch the ever those eating competitions, man? Apparently not. You know, if you ever get a chance to video and watch these guys eat these hot dogs, they dunk them in water and they shove them down. They're just blah, blah. Kind of makes you want to go blah when you see someone scarf down 62 dogs. But that's all I've got for you tonight here on a smooth edition of Unsigned. My name is Ryan. I also want to give a shout out to @CookerCarolyn. You can check her out on Twitter @CookerCarolyn. Get her cookbook, has over 45 recipes, including her fried chicken, spicy macaroni and cheese, triple bundt cake, and the Caribbean jerk sauce, which is wonderful on wings and also on hamburgers, which we did cook out with this weekend as well. Very good stuff. So definitely check that out @CookerCarolyn on Twitter. Very good stuff. And get her cookbook now. It is very good. Again, if you have one, you know that there are all kinds of great recipes on there. There are still summer cookouts to be had this year. So if you want to bring a nice dish, a nice dessert to a cookout, get the cookbook. There are a lot of good stuff on there. And the hummingbird cake alone is worth the price of the cookbook, which is $12.95. @CookerCarolyn for information on how to order your cookbook. Well, everyone, my name is Ryan. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.